Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
There's a lot of factors right now, Martin. Just being two days away from the season, there's everything we need to look at, and everything's on the table to evaluate throughout our offense, our defense, and our special teams. I mean, 8-8, no one's happy. We sit here disappointed. We're not dejected. We're working on solutions, but there's a multitude of factors. The word that comes to my mind this season is regression. And why did we regress in so many areas? We need to figure that out. We still had the young foundation that won the division last year. What happened this year is going to be part of the process we're going to go through.
Middays on the Score.
Well, let's get on with it then and figure out what to do and how to not regress and how to progress instead of regress. And maybe it just means hiring all the offensive coaches you can find.
Single one of them.
And coming up with titles for them. But speaking of titles, we do have our Super Bowl matchup. Here to talk about the Bears and the NFL with us is Kevin Fishbane. He's on Twitter, at KFishbane, our Bears beat guy on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. What's going on, Kevin? How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I love the patriotslessness of this particular Super Bowl, if I may find my inner Matt Spiegel on coining that term. It's just the whole weight of the Patriots thing is it changes these 2 weeks. I love not having it.
Yeah, it does change the dynamic, Dan. I think Super Bowl media night is next Monday, I believe, and you would have had all the awkward questions to Belichick and Brady, and you'd have that whole discussion over and over and over again. And obviously, it's not taking away from what that organization has accomplished, but they bring with them so many other side stories, and this is such a I hate to use the term that I'm going to use, like a pure football. Like, there's so much good football stuff you could talk about with this matchup, from Andy Reid's offense to Patrick Mahomes to what Kyle Shanahan has done with that run game and how good that 49ers defense is. There's just a lot of football stuff without a lot of the other stuff, and I think it's kind of makes next week's game kind of fun.
So, Kevin, we're kind of doing an informal poll of all the experts we have on the show. Here's the question. How many points would the Chiefs have to be down at the half for you to write them off?
Well, the 49ers pass rush is unlike the ones they saw the last couple of weeks.
No doubt.
And I think that does make things a little different for Patrick Mahomes to do his magic, but I'm not going to sit here and doubt Patrick Mahomes. I think I would probably put it at 2 touchdowns. I think if they're down 14, I'd say they could still make that run. I think more than that might be a little tough, because we've just seen how well the 49ers can control the pace. And the thing is, the Chiefs defense is obviously playing its best football right now, and we got a really good look at them in Soldier Field, of course, against a pretty bad opponent. But that was right when they were really hitting their stride. And I think that the way that 49ers should get after them could make it tougher for Mahomes to come back from anything more than a 2-touchdown deficit.
On the one hand, it would be easy to beat up the Bears when pointing out that all of the points the 49ers scored in the last game were scored by former Bears. On the other hand, it's easy to beat up the Bears because all their points are scored by former Bears. How fair is it?
Yeah, it's pretty fair, Dan. I mean, look, I'm probably not one to talk, because I tend to poke the Bear when it comes to pointing out fun things on Twitter about Robbie Gould and getting lots of... There's really nothing more polarizing than a Robbie Gould take, I've learned, because I get half people so angry with me because they miss Robbie Gould, and the other half acting like I didn't actually cover when the Bears cut Robbie Gould and don't actually know what went into that, and kind of mansplaining to me why that occurred. But it's worth pointing out. I mean, the thing with Raheem Mostert, it's an incredible story, and obviously the Bears were one of six teams that cut him. He didn't even have a carry with them. So, but it's I think the thing that you can look at with that 49ers team is the way that they are built to run the ball. And what we're going to see in the Super Bowl, that Jimmy Garoppolo can more than hold his own if they have to throw it. We saw it in that Seattle game at the end of the season with some of those huge third and long plays he converted. I think in addition to the watching Robbie Gould make these great field goals and seeing a running back that he cast off having these great runs, you're going to see an offense and be like, wow, why couldn't the Bears do that? And if you really want to continue playing hindsight 2020, which I think in our industry it's very fun to play, What if the Bears had fired John Fox after that 3-13 season? That's when Kyle Shanahan was available. So that is one of those kind of what if moments for them, because that was the period. I think it was Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay during that head coaching period, and who knows how things could have been different heading into that 2017 draft.
There's a measure of adaptation from both of these head coaches as well. Kyle Shanahan has changed some from his days with the Falcons. Andy Reid has changed some during his long and storied NFL career. It hasn't been the same thing always. Sure, the structure exists around which you build an offense, but I look at the Bears and the way they've assembled a brand new offensive coaching staff, or a very, very new offensive coaching staff, and I wonder if a guy like Kevin Fishbane thinks that with those new guys around him, Matt Nagy will learn to adapt or begin to adapt what it is that he's trying to get done on a field.
Yeah, you know, Matt Nagy's one of those guys who will, you know, I'm sure he watched every playoff game every second and was taking notes. Like, he seems like that kind of guy. You know, he'll tell us during the season, hey, I showed the team this play from this game, and this is something we can learn from. And when he's watching these games, I think you hit it, Connor, just this idea of adapting to your personnel. And I remember being kind of told from people that was, and obviously seeing it, that was a flaw of the Mark Trestman era. That this was like, this is the Trestman offense, and it did work in 2013, and it's not going to budge. And I didn't think Matt Nagy was that guy. And then this year, there was just so much, you know, it just seemed to be a lot of stubbornness going on. And of course, a lot of things didn't help that, from everything that went wrong, from the offensive line to the quarterback not playing the way that they all expected him to be playing and all that. But if he's watching these games, that adaptation, that ability to look at your personnel and craft a game plan that just allows them to be successful. And the one thing too that I noticed, and I'm very interested to see how they handle it. We've seen how they've handled it coaching wise, but how they handle it personnel wise. That Kansas City Chiefs offensive line was unbelievable on Sunday. I mean, the amount of time that Patrick Mahomes had on some of these plays, and then you think about the speed at receiver they have, and I was really struck by how good they were. And you think to how often did Mitch Trubisky, was he able to just kind of sit back there and move around and freelance if he needed to, as opposed to being chased out of the pocket? I mean, we know Juan Castillo's here, and that's going to change some things on the offensive line, but are they going to have the flexibility, and are they going to be aggressive enough if they think they need to change the personnel up there? Because that was one of the biggest differences I noticed. Obviously the quarterback, but watching the way these offensive lines have played compared to the way the Bears offensive line played is just such a disparity.
Love to get your thoughts on a piece of sound that we played yesterday. Brett Veach, the general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs, was talking a couple years ago at the Combine about the time that Patrick Mahomes had to not start, that he had an entire season. He didn't get into week 17 before they turned it over to him the next year. We all know what happened after that. The thought being that the Mike Glennon implosion hurried the clock on Mitchell Trubisky in a way that may have been to his detriment. Now, that's one hypothesis. How valid is it, and how much would you just say that no matter when Mitchell Trubisky played, no matter how long there was going to be an incubation, at some point you're either ready or you're not?
Yeah, it's a great thought, Dan. And I remember leading into Mitch's first season, I looked back at, you know, I might have been 10, 15 years of rookie quarterbacks to try to see, okay, is there some kind of correlation with when you start? And the result was the guys that started right away or waited a long time were the ones that were the most successful. And the ones that had the situation like Mitch had, where you started like a few games in to your first season, were generally the ones that didn't pan out. And of course, you have a correlation causation issue with something like that when you look at the teams and the coaches. And you know, you could argue whatever quarterback played with that 2017 Bears offense was not going to be successful, considering the playmakers they had and the way that offense was being run. But I think what we've learned about Mitch Trubisky and what we've learned about his biggest hindrances, which is, you know, understanding the defenses and being able to react to what defenses are throwing at him. Is it that he needed more reps? Should he have started from the get-go? Or is it that he just needed a full year to really sit and absorb the game and then have the ability to step in the next year or in week 17, what have you, and do that? I'm really not sure, because they always tell us that he's a reps guy. So maybe he just needed to get every rep he could have. Because remember, guys, that training camp in 2017, they paraded him as the third string quarterback. And it wasn't until week one that he was, okay, he's going to be the number two behind Glennon, and then Mark Sanchez will be the number three. So, you know, but clearly their plan was that he was just going to, you know, sit back and the $18 million man, Mike Glennon, was going to handle things. And maybe that's what would have worked, because at this point, though, he's had so many reps and he still needs to become what Matt Nagy say, a master of defenses. So I'm waffling back and forth, because with him, it's maybe, I don't know. I think at this point I would gladly say, yeah, it would have been better if he sat out that whole year, because we now know what it looked like, even if he did get those 12 starts his rookie season.
He's Kevin Fishbane. You can follow him on Twitter like I do, at KFishbane. And if you do, you would have seen an hour ago that Kevin tweeted Bears outside linebacker Khalil Mack is not participating in the Pro Bowl. Is that just matter of course? You know, a lot of guys bow out of that game. Some people had kind of postulated that maybe Khalil Mack was playing with something that bugged him all season long, that decreased some of the sack production numbers. Any thoughts on where he's at?
Yeah, Connor, I don't know the reason. I just know he was on kind of the list of players that will not be playing, that was on the roster. And then I'm seeing now that Za'Darius Smith is the one replacing him from the Packers. But, you know, when we went in, I don't know if you guys heard the sound. It was when we talked to Khalil Mack after the Pro Bowl rosters came out, he didn't want to talk about it. He refused to answer any question about the Pro Bowl. I think you could look at that a few different ways. One of the ways, I think, if you want to be, you know, look at it, is this is just someone that knows this wasn't that great of a season for him. Certainly not a great season for his team. And he probably doesn't think he deserves, maybe doesn't think he deserves to be there, or didn't want to talk. You know, he never likes talking about himself to begin with. He hates it. So I think when I left that little scrum in the locker room, I remember my first thought was, there is no way this guy's going to be in Orlando. So he could, there could be an injury thing that we don't know about and we might never find out about, but that is not somebody that had any interest in participating in this Pro Bowl after this season.
Speaking of the Pro Bowl, I just saw a little while ago that they've made a rules tweak for the game, and I find it fascinating. Dan and I spent a lot of time on this when we, I don't know, had read about this proposal. The rule for this year's Pro Bowl, and Kevin, if you haven't seen it, here's how it works. The rule for this year's Pro Bowl is that after a field goal or touchdown, the scoring team can either give the other team the ball at the 25-yard line or can attempt to keep the ball by lining up the offense with a 4th-and-15 from its own 25. The team either keeps the ball by gaining 15 yards for a first down or turns the ball over on downs if it falls short. It is a brand new approach
to the onside kick.
To an onside kick. What say you, K-Fish?
Oh, I love it. I think it's great. I'm all for it, because the new kickoff rules have just rendered the onside kick completely not impossible. Cody Parkey pulled it off. But it's like, I mean, it's just so hard to do it. And I think the 4th-and-15 percentages are probably, I would imagine they're pretty close to what the old onside kick percentages were. Maybe probably a little better than that. Because especially now the way that they penalize defense, that, you know, I would imagine those percentages go up. But I'm absolutely here for that. I think it's fun. I think it was the Broncos that proposed that for last year's owners meetings, and it was roundly defeated. But you think about these, the way that the game is, if you're trying to get rid of the kickoff eventually, if you have an onside kick that nobody can recover, you know, why not give these teams another shot? And the NFL is so big on, you know, the idea of competitive games and making things more interesting. It's hard when I think about those owners who are in that room who vote on these things. It's hard for me to consider them actually interested in anything like this, because it's fun.
Yeah.
But I'm a millennial. I'm thinking back to the days at the recess where you'd play two completions or make a first down. You know, I think that kind of stuff is just, it just makes the game so much more exciting, as opposed to so many of these games where a team, you know, the only chance is an onside kick and you know the game's pretty much over.
Kevin Fishbane, thank you as always, man. Appreciate it.
All right, take care, guys.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.